You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We're a little late today, but Mike knows Scott Como. How do you know Scott?
I've known Scott for a while. Working up in D.C. and stuff.
The whole bunch of people said to say hey to you. Kyle Ellison said to say hey to you. So great, great seeing those guys yesterday, and meeting some guys I'd never met, and so it was good. Como is a he's a smart guy, masquerading as a grunt, and but he swims in the deep end of the pool. And the cool part about the article they've written and the discussion they've ignited in the Marine Corps is that, you know, a lot of us have sat here and watched the budget and the Navy backing away from amphibious shipping and saying, hey, look, man, roles and missions, you know, what the hell, man? Where are we? And what happened? You know, how do we get there? What's our role? Are we a second land army? And, you know, there's always a debate. Does the nation need two of those? And so, you know, when you read what's, you know, Scott has done in terms of, hey, we need to be forward deployed. We need to be with our partners. We need to be smaller, more agile and faster, which provides safety to us, and then able to fight across the spectrum from plugging into an F-35 to executing cyber operations, to executing kinetic operations, to controlling fires, all of that. And it's all the stuff we've advertised, but there's a gap between the things we advertise and the amphib Navy, how we get there, and all the rest of it. So it's I think it's pretty cool, pretty exciting. What they have going. So anyway, your thoughts on that, Mike? You've keeled a lot of infrastructure relative to squad leaders and
that was the fight. You know, we had talked about on the show. That was the fight a while back ago. Where I understood the whole where we needed to go, and you know, I was always a very huge champion of the Marine Corps lost an ability when the war started to redefine ourselves, and it started concentrating on junk, and it looked at being, you know, a land army, where my argument was we needed to go smaller, you know, and back then it was, the word was distributed operations, you know break it down, make platoons, you know, company commanders would command across borders, and make platoons more autonomous in the spectrum of war, fighting smaller battles, and people were like, yeah, whatever, you know, okay. And then, you know, to see it all come full circle, you're like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, good job, guys. And to see these articles that are written, you're like, this is stuff, discussions that we had 20 years ago.
Well, but now what's at risk is the franchise, though, right? Like most things.
Yeah, now it's. It's important because you're right.
Yeah, the Senate Armed Service Committee is saying, hey, look, the last time you did a major amphibious operation was the Incheon landing, okay? Right? We didn't even do one when we had complete control of the sea during the war with Kuwait. That was a ruse because we weren't
right.
we weren't sure we could clear the shipping, the sea to shore lane, if you will. And we weren't willing to take the casualties associated with it, so, because we had better options. So,
well, and the argument for all those guys were like, you know, they always come up with, you know, 60% of all the world's megacities are connected, are near the sea. So, you know, there's still, you know, like, we are not going to do that again.
Right.
We can transform. We can change. We can become something better. Quit focusing in trying to build an expeditionary fighting vehicle, for God's sakes.
Well, yeah, and
we're
and what's interesting about all of that is when you look at, it's not like there, you can have a good argument about it, because when you look at the lethality of modern weapons, if you put it all together, like, for instance, we would pray to God that the Taliban or Al-Qaeda would mass someplace. Please.
Oh, yeah.
Because we would blow the living shit out of them.
But they're not. They're never going to.
And so when you look at peer-to-peer conflict, when you present a large target, You have to have complete dominance of all that can see you, right? Electronically, right? Physically, because if you don't and you sail an amphib, it will with certainty get the shit blown out of it with the thousands of lives lost there and the asset that is, you know, that you now lose. So how does it work then? How does it work? And so to me, this Scott and his crew have done a great job in terms of putting something out there that says, hey, this is how it works. They are smaller boats, right? Smaller than destroyers, faster, right? You know, and all those things. So pretty exciting because, I mean, guys like you have worked on things at Squad Leaders Course.
To legitimize and get those guys up to speed to, like you said earlier, we need them to speak the same language as our lieutenants.
Right, and it's not easy because what you're going to ask them to do is hard stuff, independent, and they might be their own decision makers. And you're saying, okay, Sergeant, that's on you now. Yeah, and so it's interesting. It's interesting. So anyway, but it's always fun to see. Talk to those guys because you know, as much as we ball bust and our friends are smart guys and girls and they're deep thinkers and they care about the Marine Corps and they care about the country. And so when you sit down and talk about these things, you know, you're going to get deep thoughts from smart people and it's really interesting to do. So.
Oh yeah. Hey, I want to ask you a question. I was doing some reading last night, and I came across stuff which caused me to do a deep dive into this stuff.
I love that.
Yeah, because you're like, I didn't know this, right? So let me ask you a question.
Yes.
What countries have tested nuclear weapons? Number one.
Number one.
Who's tested the most?
Who's tested the most? The United States.
Yeah,
largest arsenal.
United States.
Right, number two.
1,032.
Okay. Number two, Russia.
Russia, 727.
Number three, China.
No, France, 217.
Ooh. Number three, China. Number four, China.
No, UK, 88.
Number five, China.
Number six. No, that was number five, UK. Or number five is North Korea.
Number six, China.
India.
Number seven, China.
Pakistan.
Number eight, China.
Recently, yes, China would start going on.
That's called the sun shines on a dog's ass every once in a while. If you keep guessing it, at some point, China had to come on. Wow.
Yeah. And here's another quiz for you. All right. What famous ship ended its career in a nuclear weapons testing?
I know this.
Let's see.
Yeah, hold on. The Starship Enterprise.
No.
Damn it.
Close, though. You're in the right category of ships. It was an aircraft.
Hold on. The Wasp.
The USS Saratoga.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, could you believe
the
that?
The Saratoga, yeah, after all of that and the way she performed in World War II and we put her in a nuclear weapons test.
Hey,
and
well,
then
let me
also found out was the Prince Eugen, which was part of that pocket battleship.
Yeah.
The Eugen.
Eugen.
Prince Eugen.
Eugen.
Eugen. It also was in that same test, and it was sunk with the Saratoga.
Would we drag all those ships? So let me just tell you, this is interesting. Como just cited that test, right? Roy Geiger, general type, Marine Corps, led. I think it was, I don't know which amphibious corps it was, 3rd Amphibious Corps maybe, no, 1st Amphibian Corps, that went ashore on Okinawa. The largest amphibious corps the Marine Corps and Navy have ever put together went ashore on Okinawa. And he was sent back to observe that test. And Como quotes him in his article.
Yeah, Operation Crossroads.
Right. And he quotes Geiger's observation to the commandant saying, in the future, our amphibious operations will be small, will be fast, right, and will be dispersed, right, occasionally massing because of the lethality of nuclear weapons. So it's interesting. Yeah. Now they're precision guided munitions, but it's the same argument. You are not going to put together, all you're going to do is provide a target festival for somebody who, a near peer who you would try to do that with.
Oh yeah.
Interesting.
Here's another trivia. Okay. What states, where were the nuclear weapons tested? What areas?
Utah.
Number one.
Utah.
Nope, not Utah.
Nevada.
Number one. Nevada Proving Grounds. That's where the majority of all the nuclear weapons testing that took place on land in the continental United States.
Right. Yeah, the above ground tests, New Mexico, and then they
that's
below ground.
That's area 1 through area 30 are all located out there.
Oh.
Or area 1, area, you know, area 22. Were areas that they did nuclear weapons testing.
Why do we call them areas?
I don't know. Just the way they classified it. Number, what was another? Give me another. I'll give you the other one. Area. It's the Pacific Proving Grounds, the Marshall Islands.
Bikini Atoll was where we set off a bunch. That was where the test was.
Yeah, that's where Crossroads and Castle Bravo took place.
Right.
But here, I'm going to come back to that because this is something here that pissed me off when I read about that. The other states?
Yes.
New Mexico. That was Trinity, the very first nuclear bomb.
Okay, now these are above or below? Or either one?
Both, either
okay.
one.
All right.
New Mexico.
Okay.
Mississippi.
What?
Yeah, I didn't know that. Colorado.
Of course.
And Alaska.
Of course.
Alaska was to see what, in an Arctic type environment. Let's go back to the Bikini Atoll one.
Hold on. I want to go back to Mississippi. What?
Yeah, Mississippi, the state of Mississippi, had a nuclear weapons test. No one knows about that.
Was it
you're listening from Mississippi, find out if that was taking place in where you're living.
The rubes down there. Did they do it on purpose, or was it like accidentally detonated on the truck going through Mississippi on its way to a port or something like that?
I don't know. Yeah, no, it's not on purpose. But I was like, Mississippi? Yeah, I would have thought Utah for sure before Mississippi.
Yeah, I mean, the usual suspects are New Mexico, Nevada, Utah, even Colorado.
Arizona. Right? I was surprised that Arizona wasn't on the list.
Yeah, I wonder why not.
Yeah, I don't know.
McCain.
But, yeah, probably. But let's go back to the Bikini Atoll, because that one, when I was reading about that, I was like, what? Right? So the radiation levels still today... as you can imagine, are pretty high.
Now, how many years
in those areas?
That was 1948.
Yeah, so 1946 to 1957, they were dropping them out there.
How many?
Over 100. Yeah,
over 100 different weapons.
Yeah, so atomic bombs, hydrogen bombs, you know, all the onset of them. But so the scientists back then, they didn't understand what they were dealing with, right? So they would come up with this formula, and they were like, so Castle Bravo was the big one for this. So Castle Bravo was a test. So the code name for the operation was Operation Castle. So there was Castle Alpha, Castle Bravo, Castle Charlie. And it was the test of the dry hydrogen bomb, thermonuclear hydrogen bomb. It was the first time detonated in 1954. So Castle Bravo, the reason why Castle Bravo is famous or not infamous is that when the scientists were determining what the yield was going to be on this weapon system, they predicted that it was going to be 4 to 8 megatons.
Okay.
Right? So they said, if it was between 4 and 8, they said, okay, let's go halfway. It'd say 6. This was going to be a 6 megaton hydrogen bomb. When it detonated, it was a 15 megaton.
Oops.
1,000 times more powerful than the bomb dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah, but they thought it was 5 to 8 or whatever, and then it goes in at 15.
Comes out 15. And then the crazy part is when the people that actually lived there, the indigenous population, when they were removed from that area, the U.S. government told them, it'll just be a few days, and then you can come back and do this. You can back and relive, live here again. And so what happened was the inhabitants were forced off the islands,
right,
leaving all of their belongings.
Right.
And they were relocated on Kwajalein.
Kwajalein?
Yep.
Holy shit.
But it was the people, so they found out later on that these people all of a sudden started developing kind of acute radiation syndrome.
Wait a minute. I thought they were removed before the first test.
They weren't. Yeah, they weren't removed far enough.
Oh.
Yeah, because we thought it was a 6. Boom, it went off. Oh, shit, 15. Uh-oh, got a problem here. So then, yeah, and you start reading about this stuff, and then I started going down the whole, you know, looking at this, you know, in 1948, we detonated one in Nevada, and we had troops out there, U.S. troops maneuvering.
Have you seen
that video?
Yeah, you've seen the pictures.
Yeah, they're out there. Okay, we want you guys to conduct operations. We're going to set this nuclear bomb off. We don't know what it's going to cause. We do know that if you're, like, from Hiroshima and Nagasaki, if you're this close, this happens. So you're not going to be that close. You're going to be in the fallout area. But we want you to we want to see what it's going to cause for troops maneuvering. And so a lot of this, you know, there wasn't a lot of things publicized what was after, you know, become of these troops afterwards. But a lot of them suffered, you know, debilitating diseases over their life. And, you know, you look at this, and so I was trying to find, and I still haven't found, like, what was the outcomes of these? You know, what did we pay these families or these, you know, the survivors or, you know, that kind of stuff? What did we haven't really even discovered the marine ecosystem after all of this Bikini Atoll stuff. You know, what had happened to them?
Damn.
What we did find out for some of the stuff, like some of the land crabs, the coconut crabs that lived on those big coconut crabs,
right?
They actually had, they were vulnerable to cancers for the very first time, you know?
And not, they hadn't been before?
No, it was like in 2017, dude.
Wow.
They went back. Well, I mean, still studying this stuff.
Look at the way the DOD has dealt with people who live with the effects of Agent Orange, the Camp Lejeune, the Camp Lejeune water thing, they essentially turn their back on these people. You know, Karnak says, hey, Mac, what would you guess what we did with these guys we fucking nuked during World War II and shortly thereafter? Let me guess. We said it was related to something else, right? You must be eating too much burnt chicken off your grill. That's probably what's doing it, right? I mean, would that surprise you? Like, you're going to read some fucking horrible story.
No, and it's, the stuff is out there. It's just never been publicized. You know, like, the female population of the Marshall Islands have a 60 times greater cervical cancer mortality rate than any other civilization.
And are we compensating them for that?
Probably not. The island's populations have 5 times greater likelihood of breast and gastrointestinal mortality and lung cancer.
And we're taking care of all those people because we have big hospitals there, so we can take care of them.
Oh, yeah, huge hospitals, right?
Right. State of the art. Because that's the way we do it.
And then the male population of the Marshall Islands has a 4 times greater than the United States overall rate in lung cancer. Oral cancer, 10 times greater. I mean, all of this stuff, the female reproductive system, you know, I mean, it's just, it's amazing that over all this time, you know, or even back then, someone thought, hey, you know what? I don't think this is a good idea. Why continue these tests on live people? You know, what, they're islanders? You know, that's what it came out to, and you know, the Marshall Islanders.
So what, they don't count? Like, well,
yeah.
Look, well, if our own soldiers don't count, and what about the guy who sticks his hands up and says, you know, some of the research that we have indicates that radiation is not very good for you, and I mean, what are you talking about? Well, you know, I've read some reports that have come back from both Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and some of the burns, some of the flash stuff. I mean, how are we guaranteeing that this is not going to happen to our soldiers? And if we can't guarantee that, we can't do it. Hey, Gay.
Yeah, so,
hey, get his ass out of here. Who is that guy? Musselman? Get him
so
the hell out of here.
So since then, it wasn't until like 2004 where they amended this free compact association with the Marshall Islanders Independence Group that we paid $75 million over 15 years.
$75 million over 15 years?
$2.4 million paid annually to the entire Bikini population, while the remaining $2.6 million is paid into a claims trust fund.
We're such a great country.
Oh, great. I mean, so there's your – we paid $2.4 million
and here
a year.
Here I thought we had turned our back on them. Of course not. What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, like the money's going to make better, right?
Right. What did Laura say? The only thing, the only worst thing than having America as your enemy is having America as your friend.
Yeah. This is a prime example. I mean, so if you imagine you live on a small coral atoll in the Pacific Islands, and let's say for some reason you get $150 a year check from the United States government. What are you going to do with $150,000 living on a coral atoll in the South Pacific?
I'm going on vacation, man. I'm going to Disneyland.
Where are you going to move the fuck out of there? That's what you're going to do.
Is that what I'm going to do?
But, I mean, these people are tribal people. They're not going
to
move.
I'll go to Texas.
Yeah. I mean, it's astonishing.
It's disgusting.
You know, again, that we do this stuff, and it's like, you know, it was all, hey, I don't know what this is going to do, but let's set it off anyway.
Yeah, we suck. Yeah. We suck, man. We suck. I just.
But if you want to see this, it was Operation Buck Jungle that we did on the troops.
What did you? Where did you? So you woke up in the middle of the night, and you.
No. How
did this get on your radar?
I was rearranging some of my books, and I came across something in World War II. And I started reading a little
bit. That happens to me all the time. Like, I'll be doing something, and I'll, like, all of a sudden, it's like, right turn. Where's Dad? Oh, he's like, we haven't seen him for 4 hours. He's into this whatever thing he found. Right?
Exactly. That's what I do. Like, I'll be in the garage, and I'll be putting screwdrivers away. Next thing, I'm building the cabinet.
Exactly. How did it happen? Right. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but this is where I'm at. You know what? I had kind of an experience like that yesterday. So Jeff Kenney, who you know, he came, to Fiddler's Green. I'd never been to Fiddler's Green. So the arty guys were like, Chris Tavuchis is a buddy of ours. He goes, Mac, when you walk in there, right, if you feel the power of the King of Battle, get on your knees and worship. I said, okay, if I feel the power, I will get on my knees and worship. I'll let you know what happens. So I did not feel that when I walked in. But as I was leaving, Jeff Kenney and I were kind of talking on the phone as we were both driving north, from Camp Pendleton. And then I got the phone with him and I thought, you know what's really weird, Mike? Why would it never occur to us as an institution to stand up and say, after all the shit the Marine Corps has been through, stand up and say, as leaders, hey, you've got to talk about this. You've got to talk. I mean, it's pretty obvious that you have to. And the better person to talk to about your shit is a good friend, right? And we have right. those as Marines. Why wouldn't senior officers in this organization, because it's not like a reach for a conclusion. It's not like, I don't even know, some nuanced point that nobody would ever think of and then somebody thought of it. It's pretty apparent to anybody, I think, but it's like, why would we never stand up as leaders in the Marine Corps and say, hey, I'm going to tell you one thing for sure. You've got to talk about your shit. You got to talk about it, all right? And you ought to learn how to talk about it with your wife and people close to you so you can unburden yourself, because you can live through just about anything if you talk about it. If you try to put it in the closet and go that route, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. And it might destroy your life. So I'm here to tell you, as a leader, learn how to talk about your shit. Nobody, it's just weird. Nobody, we don't say that. I don't know. So that was in my head. I thought about it all last night, too. I thought, like, well, why wouldn't we say that? It's the truth.
Yeah.
So anyway, Anyway, the things that get into our heads and stay there. So where is all this going for you? Are you going to take a trip, or what are you doing?
You can't go to Bikini Atoll.
You can't?
No, you have to get a researcher's grant and all this other shit.
Like going to Chernobyl.
Chernobyl, if you look at Chernobyl, so, like, it's crazy.
Bizarro world now.
Yeah, everything, like, everybody just left. You know, there's plates with food still on them in their diner. The whole population just disappeared. And that was, 1986?
Was it? Yeah, no, you see pictures of it every once in a while. And now that, you know, you have drones with high-definition cameras and stuff like that, you know, you see even more of it. But unlike Bikini Atoll, Chernobyl was a developed city in a kind of modern state, Russia.
Chernobyl looks like Planet of the Apes stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff. I'm looking for monkeys with armor riding horses running around.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the picture, there's bumper cars still in this thing that, again, and there's all like this foliage and moss growing. And I mean, it's just, yes. You look at pictures of Chernobyl, there's the Ferris wheel and, you know, the beds, the dolls still lying on the beds.
Creepy.
It's just, and it's very, yeah. Very eerie.
Yeah. So what's your conclusion in all this? So once again, the United States
humans behave badly.
Yeah.
Humans. I said this a long ago, and I'm trying to find evidence where we're, that rules us not a parasite. We're a parasite. The Earth is our host. We're the parasite.
And we're the exploited parasite. We exploit other parasites.
Right. And Earth is like any other good host. It's trying to rid itself of the parasite. That's why we have these natural disasters, you know, and things like that. And we believe that we have a right to be here.
Yeah.
No. Okay. It was here first.
That's why we have global warming and global cooling. Let me tell you, Jeff Kenney.
We just need bigger tsunamis, bigger.
Oh my God,
Jeff
Kenney was so funny yesterday. He came on, he and Lynch came on. Somehow he started talking about global warming, and he said, "And now let me tell you how bad it is. I find out that if I don't believe in global warming, I'm a racist." I said, "What?"
Yeah, you are.
He said, "Yeah." I said, "Can you explain the logic to me in that?" He said, "No, I can't. But that's what I am. That's what they tell me, because I don't believe." Oh, my God. It was hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. So
it's true, though. I mean, if anything today in today's world, if I don't like chocolate, you're a racist.
Right.
If I don't believe in Valentine's Day, you're a racist.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you're a MAGA. You're a racist. No, you're a straight up racist. So,
yeah. If I don't think that the General Lee statue in downtown Dallas should come down from the Confederate
Cemetery. Oh, you're a straight-up racist for that.
You're a racist big time.
There's
where's your Ku Klux Klan hood?
We know you got one.
Yeah. Grand Marshal, Grand Dragon.
How could you even be married to him? A man like that doesn't believe in pulling down the statue. Have you ever thought about asking what he believes in? That maybe we should tell the whole story, and maybe we should understand.
Doesn't matter. He believes
that the nation,
the general consensus of all three of us.
Ugh.
That's the general consensus. Three people, that becomes the general consensus.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And because the minorities have the voice.
Oh my God! It is.
That's again politically correct, right?
It is awful.
So politically correct, the minorities. You know, in a democracy, majority wins, but not in a real democracy. In a real democracy, the minority is.
It is. It's the tyranny of the minority. It's the tyranny of the minority, and that controls the media.
Who speaks for the minority? No one, because you're the minority. That's how it works.
Right. And then, let me tell you, and
That's not fair. then do something different, because that's not how it works in a democracy.
And let me tell you how, and again, it won't get played up too much, but this whole event in Chicago, right?
Oh, my God.
here you have somebody who believes, believes that he can pull this off, that he thinks that he can use the media. And why does he believe that? Because he's never seen it? Well, no. He probably believes it because he's seen it happen. It doesn't need to be true. Just yell it and let everybody cover it.
Right.
I mean, that's, I didn't even know, that's crazy, horrible stuff. And, but it, you know,
it's the way the world functions now.
Yeah, it's just, you watch it and you're like, and what will be, and now the narrative will be, oh, he's got issues, he's got problems, he's a great guy, and you'll get that narrative now. Okay. Will he be held accountable for wasting the assets of the FBI, the Chicago Police Department? Well, no. You know, he needs to go to rehab. Okay. Okay. All right. So
crazy shit going on. And it's just going to get crazier, dude.
It is. It is.
Just going to get crazier.
Yeah. Because we don't want to tell the truth about the truth. Truth about the truth.
Hey, did you read the story about Kamala Harris's dad?
No, I saw the headline that said he ripped her
ripped her ass on that one.
What?
Your grandmother's turning over in her grave for stereotyping. You know, she's like, well, I smoked it once. I mean, shit, I come from Jamaica. It's not like, you know, and her dad just went off. Like, what? Good for him. Some human decency in the world.
What'd he say?
Basically stereotyping all Jamaicans as smoking ganja. You know, it's like he was just appalled, disgusted that she had done this.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah, not going to be a good Christmas at the Harris house in Jamaica.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got over her skis a couple times here in, like, the very short period of time. I mean, we talked about yesterday, you know, the comment, you know, this is akin to a modern-day lynching. And then when all of a sudden this thing turns out to be completely staged in Chicago and she gets asked about it, she says, well, it's an ongoing investigation. It'd be inappropriate for me to talk about it. Wait a minute. You tweeted electronic lynching, but while it was under investigation, too. That's beside the point. Now, back to where I was. Bullshit. It's bullshit.
Yeah. You know, she got some blast because that whole climate change is a real national emergency. We need a leader in the White House who isn't in the pocket of big oil. We need someone who will fight for clean air. You know, so that whole it was AOC and some other people that came out with that new green bill that even the scientists that, you know, believe in were like, but it's not going to work. I mean, even if the United States cut all emissions, it's developing countries that are the problem.
Hey, we don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
Look, in developing countries, like, until you get a smokestack with a filter in some factory in China, come on. You've ever looked at the pictures of the air pollution in Beijing? People, and I don't mean like, you'll see like people that have really sensitive lungs and shit like that. They'll wear face masks in the United States, right? You'll see that. But in China, in Beijing, when they have their air alerts, like people are walking around in full blown Mark 17 gas masks. Guys, people yelling, dawn and clear.
Yeah, but China, you know, it's the industrial age in China, so it's 1890.
Yeah.
They're just not, you know, they're going through this right now.
Right. But it's, so, hey, but it's the United States. We're the problem. Give me a break.
For God's sakes, put a fucking filter on those cows' farts.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
California, what is wrong with you? Do you know what that methane does? When a cow burps, a small cat dies somewhere in the world. Cow burps. The number one killer.
Oh, you think that's a joke? You want to laugh about it?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
But But we put these regulations and we put these – you know, it's like – and the crazy thing is there are people out there believing this shit. Now, you know, is it a problem? Sure. Where does it rank, though, out of problems? Probably somewhere in the – on the far end in the 100 million spectrum of problems. Like, there's the number one problem of this and methane's release from cow flatulence is probably 100 million. Why are we focusing on that? And let's focus in on this end. But that's where we go. I love it. I mean, it's just like the news continues to, and news will report the shit. You know, a top story I read today too was riding motorcycles is too dangerous. Police motorcycle unit is disbanded because of it. And where did that come from? St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh, you're the land of your birth.
Yes. Crazy people up there.
Not actually your birth, but I like to say that.
Not my birth. I wasn't born there.
You're raised.
But so what does Minnesota do? It's too dangerous. Take the cops. You know, it's. I thought it was dangerous being a cop. Let's just disband the police.
Hey.
Right?
Well.
There's something.
Yeah. You know what? We didn't really think of it, but now that you mention it. And then
Minnesota.
Look, I've got a Mike.
Police officers
we've got a model for you. You know, there was no police in Al Anbar, and everybody got to keep at least one semi-automatic weapon because the police aren't coming. So we've got a model for you. Yeah, we do. So we disband the police, give everybody a weapon, and we'll go from we'll go from there. Yeah, how about that? What do you think?
Good model. Let's try it.
Hey, an armed society is a polite society.
Polite society.
There you go. All right, what else you got going today?
Let's see. Hopefully nothing. I don't want to start a new project. Like I said, I've been working, I've been looking at the garage. I want to put cabinets in there. I saw something that, showed me how to build all these cabinets. And I'm I can do all this. And so now I'm like, do I want to build them or buy them?
Here's what I'd recommend. I'd say build one and see how you like it.
Well, I can't just build one.
I know. It'd be the prototype, though. You know what I mean? And if it doesn't look good and if you're not happy with it at the end, and after you get all the cost into it, you could still keep it as kind of a little tribute to yourself, and then you buy all the rest of the cabinets. But if you do like it, because, you know, you can trick it out more, you can do some things that, you know, you might not be able to do with off-the-shelf stuff, then you should build them.
Okay, I'll look into that.
Prototype.
That sounds good.
I say prototype. Prototype the son of a bitch. So anyway. Oh, wow. You got a lot of shit going on. All from me shitting on you for that garage picture.
Yeah, all from that.
Mike's sensitive about his garage, just for the record. He's normally has great garage pride. You know, up in North Dakota, I mused once. Hey, you know, they had these horticulture, the Grand Forks Horticulture Society is sponsoring a tour, and you were going to visit a house in Grand Forks, or six houses in Grand Forks, one in East Grand Forks, one in Crookston, you know, one in Thompson, North Dakota. And it was this tour of all these beautiful gardens, right? I said, why wouldn't we have a man cave? Because the farmers, farmers in Minnesota and North Dakota, you should see their quote unquote sheds and their garages. They are incredible. Honestly. Yeah, they do, you know, they do some repair work there, but they spend a lot of time in the winter there, mostly talking shit and drinking beer and watching sports in their garage. I said, why don't we set up a garage tour? And I had these businesses call me hey, we'll sponsor it. One was an electrical company. We love those guys, man. We do great work for them with their tricked out garage. So anyway, I think maybe you should trick your garage out, and then we'll start the great Granberry Garage Tour. And guys can go to garages all day, have a few beers, get ideas for how they trick their garage out. It'd be a good thing.
Yeah, I think I'm going to. Okay, I'm going to make a call right now. I'm going to build the cabinets.
You're pre-prototype.
No, I'm going to go straight to development.
You know, that's a recipe for fucking it up too, right? In procurement, when you decide we're going straight to development, never good.
Hey, you know, the earth was, great things in the earth were not done prototype stuff. They just jumped right into it.
Okay. This is how the road gets paved for a disaster. Unmitigated.
We'll see. No, it's going to be, you'll see.
All right. Have a good one, man.
I can't
wait to see it. Now I'm fired up.
All right. Hey,
what?
You need to come out here and spend some time, and you can help me with it.
No.
Come out for a week.
No.
The show here.
No. Maybe. I might have to fly out when Vooch takes over command of Fort Sill this summer.
Oh, he is?
Yeah. So we'll have to go to the change of command.
Okay. That's just a quick drive.
Yeah, he said it's a couple hours from you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I was talking to him yesterday.
Let's do that. You fly out here, we'll drive up there together like we did, and drive back.
All right. No, we should go to his change of command. Vooch is a good dude, and he's...
Well, no, well, you drive out here early, we'll go up to his change of command.
All right.
We'll drive over to...
And I'll inspect the garage.
Fort Sill is in Oklahoma.
Yes, correct.
Up north, right?
Yes, of you.
Okay, so I'll get to... We could probably shoot over to see. Let's we'll work this one out.
You'll have to. All right. You have to do some planning.
Got it.
But you take it for tasking. You shoot a text to him, find out the exact date. But we should be there.
And I want an invitation, and I want parking privileges.
Shocker.
Yeah. All right. I'll let's go.
There you have it. Michael Musselman here on a Thursday. That'll do it. Thanks for listening. Don't touch the dial, by the way. For whatever reason, this week, we've done great shows all week, and today's no different. In the first hour, muse about why has nobody ever said you got to talk about it? I mean, it's as plain as the nose on your face. Yeah, Grandpa was in the big one, but he never talked about it. And then my cousin, he was in Vietnam. He never talked about it. And then, so the conclusion is, I guess I'm not supposed to talk about it? Good luck with that shit, right? Yeah, I went to Vietnam. You're not supposed to talk about it. Right? It's like, okay. Just eating your ass alive because you can't get it out of your head, but you're not supposed to talk about it. And then you go see a therapist who you don't know, who doesn't give a shit about you, and they listen to you, and then you stop going. So what might be a better course of action? Find somebody who's your friend and say, hey man, can I talk to you about this shit? And don't be afraid to tell them the truth, right? But you might think that, I can only talk about this with somebody else that was there. Maybe, but you know what? Maybe not. So that is hour one, and we'll check the news. And then in hour two, you're going to hear Lieutenant Colonel Scott Comal. And so Comal came on to talk about an article that he's one of the writers on. And it's entitled, Not Yet Openly at War, But Still Mostly at Peace. And it's about the future of the Marine Corps. So he came on and talked about that. And it's really interesting. I'll put the link to the story on the Gazette, which I think you have to purchase. Maybe I can steal it and make it a PDF. Maybe I can do that. I wonder if Woody will get mad at me. I'm going to call Woody and ask him. Anyway, but let me tell you, riveting, because I think any one of us who's paid attention to budgets and seen the dismal state of the amphibious Navy has wondered, what does that mean for the Marine Corps' core mission, which is forcible entry from the sea? And so Scott Comal et al. And others they lay out a vision of what that would look like, what truly dispersed operations in maritime choke points around the world would look like, partnering with nations there. You know, vessels smaller than destroyers, capable of high speeds, robust electronic warfare capabilities, linked to the F-35, linked to the Osprey, move it around. Yeah, how about that? So it's interesting stuff. Have a great day. And then the Gunner talks about his fascination with the Bikini Atoll nuclear testing, hydrogen bomb testing, what we did to that area, and how well we provided for the people that lived there. Not. So don't touch that dial. More of All Ring Radio coming to you on your home for it. The All Warrior Radio Network. So we are over on this Thursday and out. Have a good one.